Let me read that again for continuity, can I? Sometime later, God tested Abraham, and he said to him, "Abraham, here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah, sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." It is not very often that the Bible gives us editorial comment like this: God tested Abraham. But this story gives us that. But you know what? God didn't tell Abraham. God did not say, "Abraham, this is it, the final exam." He didn't tell him. He just said, "Abraham, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your son." Now listen to these words. Listen to how he puts this. "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love." Now God could have said to him, Ishmael has already been put out of the house. God could have said to Abraham, "Abraham, I want you to take your son and offer him." He could have said, "I want you to take Isaac and offer him." He didn't. He said, "I want you to take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and I want you to offer him." Isn't that something? God pushes right to the center of Abraham's heart. "I want you to take your son, Isaac, whom you love, and offer him as a burnt offering." I've struggled with this story over the years, and here has been my struggle. There are two kinds of offerings in the Old Testament. There are what we call offerings of atonement, that is, offerings that are given as payment for sin, and then there are offerings of dedication, offerings that are given as a matter of dedicating one's life to the Lord. The burnt offering is one of those offerings of dedication. And here's my struggle. If we take the story of Abraham giving his son Isaac and try to parallel it with God giving his son Jesus to die on the cross, how do we reconcile those two things? I don't know how to reconcile them, but there are so many parallels in this story to the story of Calvary that I need to accept them. This is God calling Abraham to give him his son as a burnt offering. The idea of a burnt offering was, look, you put it on the altar and you burn it, all of it. It's burned up. It's totally dedicated to God. And that's what God called Abraham to do, to offer his son on an altar and burn his body. Put yourself in his place. We don't have a son named Isaac, but we have a grandson named Isaac. How do you deal with that? How would you deal with that? Could you? Here's another thing about this little passage. It is, take your son and take him to the region of Moriah. Now here's a little map. And Abraham lives down near the bottom there, on the bottom left-hand corner in Beersheba. All right? Where's Moriah? Right where Jerusalem is. Moriah later becomes Jerusalem. He says, take him to the region of Moriah and offer him there on one of the mountains I will show you. Now, don't hold me to it, but what mountain are you thinking about? And the commentators don't say it. None of them has the nerve to say it in print, but this is not in print, so I can say it. I'm asking a question. Did God ask Abraham to take his son Isaac to Calvary and offer him as an offering? One of the mountains I will show you in the region of Moriah, and the region of Moriah was Jerusalem. I can't escape that. That thought clings to my mind, that God asked Abraham to take his son and offer him. And here's my point. God did not ask Abraham to do what he himself would not do. Indeed, he did much more than Abraham, as we will see. All right? next little section in our story. How is Abraham going to follow through on this? Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. You see the word that that little paragraph begins with? Early the next morning. Immediate obedience. Immediate obedience. Did Abraham sleep that night? I don't think so. How could he? But early the next morning, he rose. And I don't know whether to take this literally or simply as we might otherwise. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, did he cut the wood himself? He took two servants with him. He could have had one of his servants cut the wood. Did he cut the wood himself? He thought, I'm going to a place, I don't know where I'm going exactly. I'm going to the land of Moriah, and it's kind of a barren area maybe, and I don't know if I'm going to have enough wood, and so we better take some wood for the offering. And he could have had his servants cut the wood, but it says he cut the wood. I don't know if we can be tied down too tightly to that, but did he cut the wood because he needed to do something to take his mind off what he was thinking? Or what? He cut the wood for the offering. Immediate obedience. He rises early in the morning and cuts the wood. Moving on. On the third day, that is the third day of their journey, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." They traveled for 3 days. Why did God make him travel for 3 days? Well, perhaps because he wanted it done there. And perhaps he wanted this to be another part of Abraham's test. This was to be not only immediate obedience, but a fixed obedience. He was to have 3 days to contemplate what he would do when he came to the land of Moriah. Was he going to be able to go through with it? For 3 days, he pondered that. I'm sure he did. I don't know that there was very much conversation on the way. We are told about a conversation when they reached the place. We're not told about any conversation while they were going. Did Abraham stolidly march on in silence, contemplating what lay ahead of him? Or did he chat with Isaac and the servants as he normally would? We are not told. He says to the servants, "You wait here," when they come to presumably the foot of the little mountain. He said, "You wait here, and I and the boy will go there and worship. And listen to this, we will come back to you." Now, it could have been that he just said that because that's what's expected. But I don't think so. I think he said that in faith. In faith. The writer of the book to the Hebrews says that he offered Isaac, trusting that God could raise him from the dead. And he says to his servants, "I and the boy are going to go up there and worship, and we will come back to you." Now, Abraham's been through a lot of tests. He has failed some of them, but he's passed some as well. And I think this is the final exam, and he's ready. He's ready for it. He says, "I and the lad will come back to you." All right? Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father." "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. I'm particularly struck by these words, the two of them went on together. They occur at the beginning of that little passage, and they occur at the end. The two of them went on together. Think about it. Jesus is approaching Calvary. He's carrying his cross. And the Father is right by his side. Isn't he? Where else would he be? Where else would he be? He's right with him. And I suppose that when Jesus was hanging on the cross and God himself had either withdrawn his presence or Jesus felt like he had, even if he had not, he said, Father, where are you? Why have you forsaken me? Because he had been with him right up to that point. And Abraham and Isaac went on together. And he took the wood from the donkey's back and gave it to Isaac, and Isaac had to carry the wood. You know the parallel. All right? And then we come to these words at the end of this passage. God will provide. Faith does not get any deeper than that. Faith does not get any deeper. God will provide. Isaac had asked the dreaded question. They had come for these 3 days, and now finally Isaac asks the question, where's the lamb? Abraham did not have a lamb in reserve. Just in case, Abraham simply answered the question, God will provide. Amazing. Amazing faith that he demonstrates. This is not only immediate obedience, and it's not only steadfast obedience, it is confident obedience. Confident obedience. Going on. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. Imagine his thoughts. He had built altars before, but this was different. And Isaac's a boy. You think he just sat there and watched his father build the altar? I think they built it together. But this was different. What is he thinking? He arranged the wood on the altar. What's he thinking? And then it says he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. Now, if we are to take this, strictly speaking, as it stands, I think I have to disagree with most of the commentators on this text. Most of the commentators on this text say that Isaac was a teenager. Abraham was over 100 years old. He's going to take a teenager and tie him up and lift him onto the altar? I don't think so. I think Isaac must have been younger. I think Isaac must have been small enough that Abraham could do that. Bind him, tie him up, lift him. He had placed lambs on an altar before. He had no doubt placed other things on altars before. But now he's placing his son on the altar. And then he... Get inside Abraham's head right now. He reached out his hand and took the knife and raised it over his son Isaac. What's he thinking? His faith is absolutely grounded on the character of the God he knows. But how can he do this? How can he do it? But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." God stops him, dead in his action. And he says, "Now I know that you fear God." Now, I know that there's a problem with that and the omniscience of God, that God knows everything from the beginning. I know there's a problem with that. But frankly, I try not to let that be a problem in this way. Think of it in this way. When God sent his own son to earth to die on a cross, and Jesus was in the Garden of Eden, sweating, as it were, great drops of blood because of his agony, did the Father feel that agony? When Jesus hung on the cross and felt the nails tearing at his hands and his feet, and felt the utter fatigue of the torture he had been through, and felt the pain, and felt all of that, did the Father not feel that? But he knew it from the beginning. No. In spite of the fact that God may know everything from the beginning, God enters into all of our lives fully. And you can't put anything off on God's foreknowledge or God's omniscience or God. God enters into life fully with us and feels all of our pains. And here he said, "Abraham, I've been going with you through this. And now I know. Now I know." The final test. All right. "You have not withheld from me your son, your only son." And finally, these words. Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abram called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. Now that apparently is a proverb that was going around in Israel. And if indeed this happened on Mount Calvary, think of the meaning of that. On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. What an amazing truth. What an amazing truth. I said at the beginning that God had not told Abraham it was a test. He had gone through the other tests. Some he had passed, some he had failed. He came to this one, and he responded as God knew he would. But I wonder if Abraham knew. I wonder if he knew that he could get through this final test. But he did. He got through it. I think he passed it because of one thing. I think there was only one thing on which Abraham could rest that enabled him to pass this test. He knew God. And he knew that God would come through for him in the end. God later gave laws that people are not to sacrifice their children. God doesn't do that kind of thing. Abraham knew God was going to come through for him. I don't know where you are in life, what troubles, what burdens you're carrying. God may not tell you this is a test. I think there are two kinds of tests. There are daily tests, and then there's the biggie. Abraham, as I said, did not pass all the daily tests. He failed some of them, but he came back to God, and he asked for help, and he went through again. He kept on going down the road. And when he came to the big test, he was ready. I don't know what your big test might be, but are you standing in the daily tests? Are you standing in the daily decisions? Are you standing in the daily choices? Are you standing in the daily dilemmas that you face for God? And when you come to the big test, you'll pass like Abraham. Like Abraham, who gave his son, and God took his son and gave him right back. What an amazing God.